Blog Talk Radio.
Welcome. Welcome to the show.
I offer up myself to you, protected by your hand. My dreams and schemes and all I have surrendered to your plan. I know that I'm inadequate, I stumble and I fall, but still you always pick me up whenever I will call.
We humbly bow before you. We love to praise and adore you. We humbly bow before the throne. We give you all the glory. Salvation is our story. We humbly bow before the throne.
I offer up myself to you, protected by your hand. My dreams and schemes and all I have is surrendered to your plan. I know that I'm inadequate, I stumble and I fall, still you always pick me up whenever I will call.
We humbly bow before you. We love to praise and adore you. We give you all the glory. Salvation is our story. We humbly bow before the throne.
I need you by my side. Forgive me for my pride. Please hear my cry before the throne.
Traveling for several days. I left June 30th and I returned Monday morning in the middle of the night. I have not kept up with too much headline news, and I went through a large transition in life, meaning that I was exposed to the Fort Benning military base. I found out directly what it was like to be the mother of a son in an army. I was once formerly a Navy wife in Norfolk, Virginia from 1984 to 1987, but then my husband left the Navy 1 year early because they accidentally screwed up his paperwork. So we moved from Waukegan, Illinois to Los Angeles in 1987. So tonight's topic is a little personal, and the top two hosts that are present tonight have experienced something in this genre. It's called Being in Recovery and Addiction, Separating Ourselves from the Toxicity of the World. So I'm just going to read the paragraph, and Don can comment as much as he wants on this topic. But I just thought I'd make it personal. The only other major, I've seen a lot of blockbuster headlines about Joe Biden trying to put through giant packages about the infrastructure and student loan debt, but we can cover that later in the show. This is the show description. I am now a newly appointed Army mom. I went to see my son graduate from Fort Benning in early July. He will be stationed on the West Coast. I have also attended the last 6 years outpatient gambling treatment. I have learned many lessons in the last 6 years, even relapsing a few times. Everyone's experience is different. I see new people coming into our treatment that have to overcome major hurdles. For example, they don't understand turning your will over to a higher power, surrendering to the addiction, meaning that you admit to yourself that you have no power over the addiction, and that's actually the first step. I come to an agreement that I have no power over my addiction. Another partner on this radio show has had the similar struggles in the past, and he has primarily survived and conquered his addiction. Good evening, Don. How are you doing?
I'm doing okay, and it's just a beautiful day out here. We've got four fires just a couple, about less than 100 miles away, and they're messing up the air sometimes, but we're okay.
Yeah, there was a bad fire by Mount Shasta, because I have a friend who lives there, and this is a week ago, and he said several of his friends lost their home.
Yeah, it's maybe a worse fire season than last year, and last year was worse. But we know what to expect down here. We won't get on fire, but everything around us will.
Yeah, remember that fire two or three years ago in Paradise, California, where the whole town burned down?
Yeah, it was a beautiful little town tucked underneath in the foothills, underneath a nice little hill. Side, and it was just a peaceful little town.
My pastor, Tom Stringfellow, owned a house there, and it burned.
Everything burned.
That was their second home. They had a home in Valencia, but that was their retirement home. And they weren't up in Paradise when it happened, but they still lost a lot of property.
I'm sorry for them. I pray for them.
Yeah, that was. I think it was a good 2 or 3 years ago. But the problem is the fire seasons didn't usually start until August and September in California. So we've had a few random fires up here, and Canada had a city that burned too in the Manitoba province. So their fires extended all the way from the west coast to the middle of the continent.
British Columbia has had record heat, the last three weeks.
I heard about it. I heard Seattle, Washington had 112 degree weather, so it probably migrated up past the Canadian border.
I was going to mention
something before we get started. I listened to a show of ours about 14 months ago with Ben and John on it when Soleimani had been killed by the Trump administration. And I wouldn't say the Trump administration ordered it, our military did, but it was an excellent episode. And I miss the days when we had full participation. We had John, you, Ben, and myself on the show, and I think Wade was on one of those two episodes, and it was just a lot more dynamics and education. Ben is highly educated.
But
you were yelling at John because he was doing the same thing on the show, like saying like Obama and Bush had corrupt foreign policies and Trump knows exactly what he's doing, you know, that kind of stuff.
That was before Epstein, before a lot of things that have gone on since then.
Yeah, I mean, he was already in the, and I'm not knocking John, it's just the way he thinks, but he was already in the preliminary stages, pretty much honoring Donald Trump versus the last four administrations. Like, you know, like the military often acts independently of the White House. Like, they make suggestions to the White House what they're going to do next. But they're not they sometimes go above the White House's head.
Right. So, but the White House,
would you have a problem talking about addiction tonight?
Problem? No. Do I want to? No.
We don't have to make it really personal, but because I made it in the headline, which I can change, I just want to gloss over a couple. I want to talk about my outpatient therapy for a minute, and then if you want to add something, you can. How's
okay.
that?
Yeah, because all of us have an addiction of some sort. And, you know, cleanliness, extension of please and thank
like
you,
OCD.
Things like that. Oh, yep, overly being etiquette. Having excessive etiquette. Those are problems. Those are addictions, along with the other components of chemical and physical and abusive, mentally abusive addiction.
I think one thing we can say is that any addiction causes anxieties. You know what I mean?
No, most.
Whether it's a like let's say it's somebody
addiction.
Obsessing about their weight. It doesn't have to be like drinking and gambling.
Chemical addictions take away stress. That's what the problem is. It takes away the stress. People feel too relaxed. They lose their consciousness, and they don't take responsibility for themselves.
Well, it's kind of like what it's really called is it's called escaping.
Right.
Now, you can get drunk on $5, but if you're a gambler, I'm going to tell you a little story, and that's why I'm going to tell you I'm talking about this topic tonight. It's twofold. So I have a son who's 22, and he listens to about 10% of what I say. And he's never gambled in his life. There was a period where he was smoking weed, but he hasn't really done anything super naughty. So he crossed the country in 2 days and landed in Vegas. And out of the blue, he said, I'm taking $1,000 to a casino and I'm going to spend it. This is what he was trying to tell me in so many words, is he was going to have fun. And I said, well, can't you start with $200 since you never gamble? Like, why do you have to start with such a high number? Because he has to be at Barstow tomorrow, which is Sunday. So, like, that kind of shook me up because I was more worried about him getting across the country with all his stuff in his car and parking it by the Barstow base rather than taking a beeline to a casino. But I understand because he turns 23 tomorrow, and he's been in boot camp and basic training 6 months, so he needed some form of release. Well, then I got to thinking I've been clean for quite a while, and there's new people coming through our 12-step program, which I cannot name names. But the first essence of 12 steps for gambling is we admitted we were powerless over gambling, that our lives have become unmanageable. So usually for people who keep relapsing, they never swallow the first step. They never admit that they're a pathological gambler by the textbook definition, and they try to do it on their own strength to quit, or they might sneak to this casino to make up for losses, but they never really completely embrace the first step. So therefore that person gets in big trouble. And we have someone in our group who's had a lot of trauma in the past. And I can't name names, but her mom died in a car accident. Her brother died of something else. And the fact of the matter is that she's in our meetings, but she's very fragile. And she listens while she's in the meeting, but then she'll make comments later and sometimes on social media that she's about to relapse before it happens. Or she'll say that she could have relapsed, but she turned it around and someone talked her out of it. So, like, I'm very open on some of my social media outlets, but I'm not that open about personal confessions because I think it opens yourself up to scrutiny. So I sent her a text today, and I said, listen, first you have to recognize gambling for what it is. It's a temptation in which the devil is trying to cause you to engage in destructive behavior that's eventually going to hurt your life. Because even if you win $500, a compulsive gambler will go back the next day and try to win $1,000, $1,500. They're not going to stop at their first winning. So even if you're in action, like our counselor says, there's always going to be room for tremendous risk. And once you've been clean for 60 to 90 days, you start recognizing that you don't have to live your life in chaos and constant worry and, like, getting cash advances or getting loans. You can just live your life normally and not have such risky behavior and find other hobbies that don't destroy you. And as you know, 3 years ago, 4 years ago last summer, I was out there in 2017. I was up 1,000 at 6 in the morning in Reno, and I went back in the casino with $1,000 in my pocket, and I spent it all back. So, like, people are just stupid when it comes to gambling. If you have an addiction, you can't stop when you're ahead. You keep trying to win more. So I just thought I'd open the floor up to anybody in the Blog Talk community that might have something to say about this, because we talk about a lot of stuff on this show, but we really don't talk about our everyday struggles. But really, having an addiction is a bigger picture concept on how we cope with regular stresses in society. Like in the last year or two, the entire country was under a COVID scrutiny, and certain parts of the country still is. We had to behave and act differently. We had to behave differently in public. Some people lost their jobs for good. Other people were working overtime because they were caregivers like myself. So in the last few years, with all the uncertainty and several elections around the world that have been not so on the up and up, like Uganda and the United States and a few other places, and Israel, there's been a lot of stress in the world. So do you have any comments based on what I just shared?
I'm not. The only comment that I have is that everybody who kind of follows what I said, anybody who is anybody has an addiction. You're not any different than anybody else, except your addiction is your addiction. You know, and I, in my lifetime, I have poly addictions that multiple times simultaneously. So
what's
poly
addictions, like pills?
Like everything.
Poly means multiple.
Right.
But at first I thought
multiple.
You meant a poly substance, like a pill.
That's what you call it. You call it poly substance user, which means that you sit down and anything that's at the table or everything that's at the table goes in your system. So you can have 8, 10, 12 different drugs, including alcohol, caffeine, sugar. Those are all drugs. Those are all addictive. And you can have 8 or 10 or 12 of them in your system at one time. That's a poly substance abuse abuser.
I think I heard about a person today in a neighboring city. The grandma was suffering, and I think she was within a year of dying, and one of her granddaughters took her pills from her house. It was probably some kind of painkillers, and she took them. She stole them from her grandmother, which is against the law, technically.
But everybody does it.
Well, not everybody. I mean, to steal from your own relative? No. I've known two nurses who have stolen from the workplace, and one ended up committing suicide later on, but the other one went through treatment, and she was given her license back.
Okay. You're telling too much here, darling. But anyway.
I said a few nurses. I didn't say they were from up here.
Okay. Well, anyway. So, you know, there any kid, well, most kids, using drugs have gotten them from their parents or their grandparents. More than likely their grandparents, because their parents are young enough to remember what drugs they have. And then, so, you know, that's the only difference. The grandparents aren't always cognizant of which drugs they have, how many, and where in some instances. So that's much easier access. But kids are getting addicted at earlier ages all the time, and it's because of their parents and their grandparents.
Well, I was thinking maybe like some teenager around 15 who has knowledge of barbiturates is telling their other peer about it, and then they would say something like, well, have you looked in your parents' medicine chest and see what's in there? Let's try this. Like, people just don't come up with ideas on their own. Maybe somebody's influencing them. Right?
Absolutely. Well, that's what I just said. I mean, the influence is beyond that. I know parents who are partying with their 14-year-old kid and don't think it's anything about it. They will have alcohol. The kid's friends will come over, and everybody's getting drunk and high. At some, you know, but they're justifying, parents justifying it. Well, at least they're doing it at home. So, you know, these kids, what, a new survey, or the survey came out that 68% of all kids under a certain age try pot. And, you know, this is way more intense than
I tried it once in my life,
think.
And I only tried it once.
That's
now,
a good thing.
68% is really, it's high, but it's not skyrocketing. That's
I'm talking
like
about
six,
kids 14 years old, I think the age group was.
Well,
Lauren,
my son
or
told me he was offered more drugs in Minnesota than Southern California.
That's because nobody talks to anybody in Southern California, and everybody talks to everybody in Minnesota.
Yeah, it's not. There's a different kind of friendliness in California. It's more of a general friendliness, but up here, sometimes people can be tight-lipped, too, and not that open and friendly. It depends on the dynamics of the schools.
Right. Well, bottom line is that every kid has access to drugs almost everywhere. There are different types of drugs, but if their system is addicted to whatever it is, then they'll be addicted, you know, no matter where you live.
I hear you. So,
and you have to remember
and
that.
What I think about the modern society is that less than 50% of kids are going to a traditional church. So they're not taught family values right in the home. They don't think premarital sex is wrong. They think recreational drugs might be okay as long as you don't overdo it. There's a lot of loose morals in the world with it. I don't want to sound like a straight-laced person, but there's a lot more cultural freedom now. And we've already talked about gender bending, so I don't really want to talk about that tonight. But I do want to bring up another subject about Amazon Kindle in a few minutes. So what's on your mind tonight as you embark on your family business in 3 days?
Yeah, no.
I won't mention on the air, by the way.
That's all right. No. I'm lucid. I mean, I'm here. I am a professional. And so I know that I have work to do. But for the most part, I'll be working hard to make, you know, a better world. I'll have a lot of time or some time to read. And one of the things that I want, the sort of reason for this is to go ahead and maybe start writing a book or some kind of a treatise or, you know, just
would
a
it
little,
be a, autobiographical or a certain topic?
Well, I started an autobiographical, but I'm not sure how far I want to take it, mainly because I've done way too much and people can't imagine what I've done. But so it would sound like fiction anyway. But for the most part, it's going to be bordering on a nonfiction autobiographical type of thing that
I started my book. I didn't mean to interrupt. I started my autobiographical novel in the second person, and now I'm running into problems because it's hard to describe very personal things in the second person.
Okay. Yeah, I can imagine.
In other words, I'm a character in my own book. My name is Shanoa, and so I always have to talk from the second person. I can't use I statements.
So you said your name was Blah? I can understand.
No,
that.
Shanoa. Chenoa. And my identical twin is named Chelsea. Chelcie. But I first talk about my high school years. I don't go too much into my primary years. I talk about my dad's alcoholism and my success running in college. And then I talk about my worldview during college, like how I was a crusader and I wanted to be a social scientist and make the world a better place, and I was overly idealistic and stuff like that.
But you were, because you're doing exactly that.
I'm still acting like an idealist, but I at least make money now and pay bills.
There you go. So you're a success. You're not a failure or whatever you just called yourself.
Well, let me tell you something, though, that's tied in with the addiction. I owe the IRS $6,000, approximately over 3 years. And that's going to take me probably 3 years to pay off if I'm only paying them like $100 to $200 a month. And then I'm applying for student debt relief because I'm not making any headway with that. And other than that, my bills aren't too bad.
Okay, good. And one of the things that you have to remember or make sure of is that your IRS payments are not accruing interest. You want to make sure.
Well, they are right now, but what I'm going to do is if you write a letter and ask for a payment plan, then the interest can be reduced.
Right. So I hope you've done that. That's what I'm saying.
Well, I've done the first step. I wrote a letter.
Okay,
now,
great.
One thing I want to discuss about people and just everything in general is, like, I started adulthood around, well, I finished high school in 78, I finished college in 82, but I didn't really enter adulthood until 1983. And I lived a pretty decent life up until age 33, but that's when I started engaging in self-destructive behavior after my daughter died. I started gambling at 36. I rang up some debt and immediately filed bankruptcy, which I look at it now, I probably shouldn't have because it was under $5,000. I have never filed bankruptcy since. That was in 96. I filed bankruptcy in 96.
You filed bankruptcy for $5,000?
Something like that.
You out your mind. That's a credit.
Well, I was a young kid, and my dad wouldn't give me advice. I was 37 going on 38, 36 going on 37. I was pregnant with Lauren, so I wanted to start a clean slate.
Well, then don't doubt it. Don't doubt what you did. You did the right thing then, if that's your...
Well, now it's been 23 years since he's been born, and I really didn't fall into darkness until he was around 12, let's see, in 2014. He was around 16 years old. So anyways, I straightened myself out, but I still have some bills to pay is what I'm saying. But some people are self-destructive their whole life, and they just end up dying. But I just kind of want to live a clean, normal life now and not be a risk taker. And that's kind of why I touched upon the recovery, because every day something unexpectedly happens. Like when my
but just
son...
Remember, some people also live perfect lives and die as soon as they retire or, you know, walk out one day and get hit by a car. You never know.
That happened to my grandpa. I think he died 6 months after he retired at 65.
Right. And there's a friend of ours who just died a few weeks ago in the same boat. It's going to be crazy because he's left, fifth or sixth wife, or seventh wife that he probably didn't like. Everything, probably. The house, the car, new car.
He left her everything?
We don't know yet, but more than likely he did. I don't know if he had any beneficiary. He should have, but he was just weird. But he was he was pretty well off and had just retired. So now everything is probably hers, and, you know, she's just laughing, you know, okay, sucker. You know, but the bottom line is that this is something that anything can happen, and I don't want anyone to live in fear. You live your life, you know, and then I don't like to have anything hanging over me. I don't like to take anything home from work. I don't like anything that's going to interfere.
Well, how do you cleanse yourself? Like, what is your version of living righteously?
Living righteously, I don't do anything, so I live righteously. I mean, I am right now a relative recluse, except for camping or going out just to drive or walk.
Part of that is because you don't have a job right now, but normally
correct.
You're pretty active in the community.
I'm very active, and that's why this COVID shutdown has really affected my psyche. Psychologically, this thing, dead time, I'll call it, has really made a mark on my mental health negatively, and I am trying to break out of it. I'm going back to events. We just came back from a blues concert, afternoon blues concert here. You know, we're at a festival, so we're trying to slowly get back into the swing of things. But it's incredible how social I was, I am. And I didn't know how social I am. But that's, it gives people new perspectives from the staying in.
I hear you.
It sure did me, and you know, the other aspect you mentioned, I usually work, I do, and I don't take anything from the government, hardly never have. But this PPP, I've been able to get on it or have it a long time. It's October.
You're talking about pandemic pay. And that
right.
PPP is protective equipment.
Oh, okay. The CARES pay. CARES Act pay. And
it's called PUA, Pandemic Unemployment Assistance.
Right. Well, all I know is money's coming in the house and I don't have to do a thing, and that doesn't seem right to me. But,
well, I don't feel good about it either, but I milked the system about 2 extra months, but I had a breach in my job in February. I was laid off from a certain industry, and then I got rehired in March. So I've had a few setbacks in the last year.
Right. I know. And I, prayed for you for that too. But in all...
Well, I have a friend who's been sitting on PUA for a full 12 months, and I think... No, he's been on it 15 months. He hasn't lifted a finger. He hasn't looked for a job. He's completely full of shit. It's fraud, basically.
Well, it's not fraud. If he's eligible for it, he's eligible for it. I'm not.
I know,
I'm
but you're supposed in Minnesota. You still now they require you to look for a job while you're on it.
Right.
And you can't just sit around and just pretend that everything's hunky dory and you're looking for a job and you can't find it. You have to legitimately can't find a job.
Right.
And I'm not judging. I'm just observing people's behaviors, and some people are liars.
Well, that's what I was talking about. I mean, I'm talking about the fact that all of this stuff is being handed to us, and a lot of large, some part of our populace, and it is changing our position on what things are. You know,
because now
are,
they can't find people for service jobs.
Right, and people don't want to train for jobs, period, anymore. So, you know, this is something that has turned into a potential fiasco financially or economically because of work. You know,
the only good side effect is when people are getting that $300 extra a week, they're spending it in the economy somewhere. Maybe not everybody, but besides paying rent, somebody's buying a new car or somebody's saving money to buy a new car or move. Like I know some people who are saving and some who are spending.
Most people have more money than they know what to do with. Right now, we are more liquid than we've ever been. We've got more money running around, and 1% has most all of it. And
but don't spend it all. Save some.
This is people we're talking about. People don't know how to spell save. So
I do.
Yeah.
I mean, I'm doing. I have 3 uncashed checks right now. That I haven't even cashed. But would you do me a favor and talk for like 60 seconds? I got to finish dressing for work.
Okay, no problem. Go ahead.
So do a 60-second soundbite. I'll be right back.
Okay, well, I really don't know if the CARES Act, the monies that were being spent right now for people not to work, works. And I do have a problem with not being disciplined enough to go get up and go to work every day or have a business where you have to utilize all your knowledge and wares if you want to make money to live. I do expect my kids to have jobs at an early age to accrue pensions and benefits. So that's one of the things that I like, and they can do that as an entrepreneur or as a general regular worker. So those are some of the things that I wanted to speak on in terms of the PUEs and things like that. But one of the main things I'm worried about is critical race theory and the educational system. I helped pass a multicultural curriculum law here in Nevada. And they're bastardizing my law by one side bringing on a critical race theory curriculum that is for something that doesn't exist. It's kind of like voting rights laws. We don't need any voting rights laws. We don't need any educational law changes. We don't need anything like that because the voting fraud is 0.08. And so when you've got something that's non-existent and you've got all these goofy people running around trying to change something that works or is not flawed, then, you know, people are just spinning their wheels, using too much time.
I'm back. Keep talking.
Doing nothing as opposed to being able to do something get better jobs.
You guys have a new puppy?
Infrastructure. Yeah, we do have a new puppy. Now he's 3 months old. She's 3 months old. We got her about a month ago. And
what kind of dog?
Well,
they call him
English Sheffield, which is not another word for
sheepdog.
No. The got pit bulls, and then also
okay.
Also it's a pit bull lab mix, English Pointer lab mix. So it's a really nice looking dog, and we have a cat who is now 9 months old, so they get along pretty good. So
do your grandkids like the dog?
Oh yeah, they love them. As a matter of fact, along with everything else with the pandemic, all of our
God, he's really barking. Why is he barking? Because he's in a cage?
No. He's outside. If he was in a cage, he'd be cool. She'd be cool. But
okay, I'm just letting you know. I'm in 3 minutes. I'm switching to my cell phone, and then I have to leave for work.
Yeah, well, the pandemic made sure that all the animals were snapped up. So everybody got an animal who didn't have one during the pandemic. And prices of animals went sky high. And that's everything from turtles and rabbits to dogs and cats and horses. So animals are now much more expensive than they ever have been. But now that the opening of this communities, the state's opening up, people are pretty much giving back their animals because they don't have as much time as they had going back to the office and school instead of staying home at work. So that's the gist of that. So what else did you want to talk about before?
Okay, we have two choices. It's 10:42 and we only have 10 more minutes of the show because once I get to the halfway house, I have to punch in.
Go ahead.
Well, right now Lauren just texted me, so I have to text him back. So just give me a second.
Okay, tell him. I hope you told him.
He's only a couple miles from the base.
I hope you tell him I said congratulations.
Yeah, I'll send you. Since you don't check Facebook, you don't know how buff he is.
No, but
he's pretty buff right now. He's super skinny and muscular.
Right. Well, it would have been great if he got buff when he was bigger, because then he would be a powerhouse. Now he's got to rely on speed.
Well, he's still skinny, but he's fit because he doesn't have an ounce of fat on him. And he's
right.
Army ready. Now he's going to a base where they train people to go to war, but he himself does not have to go.
Right,
I have to handle a problem at home, so I'm thinking I'm going to close the show now. But tomorrow I'm going to text you and say goodbye because you're going on your journey soon. Okay? Something came up in the last 5 minutes. Okay? Are you there? Don?
Yeah, something came up.
I have to go, so I'm going to end the show now because I have to go to work anyway, okay?
All right, no problem.
So,
that's what I said.
And
I'm
probably going to do a show like once a week till you get back on Thursdays because that's John's only day off. But keep in touch, and I'll text you my address, okay?
All right, you got it. No problem.
Okay, have fun on your on your journey, and I'll talk to you soon, okay?
All right. Bye, everyone.
Bye-bye.
Bye-bye.